Hello, and welcome to the April IASB Update Podcast. I am Neely Shah, the Executive Technical Director at the IASB, and today, as always, I am joined by the Chair of the IASB, Andreas Barco, and the Vice Chair of the IASB, Linda Maison-Hutter. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Neely. Great to be back.
Thank you. As always, we will share with you the key highlights from our April IASB meetings. And I said meetings in the plural because this month we actually had two. So let's dive straight into it. We'll start with our maintenance and consistent application project, International Tax Reform Pillar 2 Model Rules. This is a project where we've been moving quite quickly to respond to recent developments. Andreas, could you take us through the IASB's discussion on this project at our special supplementary meeting?
With pleasure, Neely. In January, we proposed amendments to IAS 12, our standard on income taxes, to respond to stakeholders' concerns about the effects on deferred tax accounting of the Pillar 2 model rules published by the OECD. This month, after considering stakeholders' feedback, the IASB decided to finalize its proposed amendments to IAS 12. The amendments will introduce a temporary and mandatory exception to the accounting for deferred taxes arising from the implementation of the Pillar 2 model rules. Therefore, companies will not recognize deferred tax assets and liabilities related to Pillar 2 model rules. We decided not to specify how long the temporary exception would be in place, but we will continue to monitor developments related to the implementation of the Pillar 2 model rules to determine when to do further work in this area.
We also discussed disclosure matters. In periods when legislation is enacted but not yet in effect, the amendment set out a disclosure objective that will require companies to disclose information to help users of financial statements understand the company's exposure to Pillar 2 income taxes. The amendments will require companies to meet that disclosure objective by disclosing known or reasonably estimable qualitative and quantitative information about its exposure at the end of the reporting period. To the extent information is not known or reasonably estimable, an entity would instead be required to disclose a statement to that effect. In periods when the legislation is in effect, the amendments will require companies to disclose separately their current tax expense related to Pillar 2. Finally, companies should apply the temporary exception immediately upon issue of the amendments and provide the required disclosures for annual reporting periods beginning on or after the 1st of January 2023. However, companies are exempted from providing the disclosures during interim periods within 2023. We expect to issue the final amendments in the second half of May.
Well, thank you both. On the subject of Pillar 2, our outreach also provided us with evidence that the rules could have a material effect on the financial statements of some companies applying the IFRS for SMEs accounting standard. So far, Andreas and Linda have been talking about amendments to full IFRS. In April, the IASB decided to develop narrow scope amendments to IFRS for SMEs accounting standard outside of the normal periodic review. The IASB will have a supplementary meeting in May, and we expect to publish the exposure draft of amendments to the IFRS for SMEs accounting standard in the second quarter of 2023. We also discussed the provisions project, which seeks to make targeted improvements to IAS 37, provisions, contingent liabilities, and contingent assets. Linda, can I hand it over to you for some updates?
Sure. Thanks, Neely. I will start by providing our listeners with a bit of context on this project. One criterion in IAS 37 to recognize provisions is the existence of a present obligation. IAS 37 includes requirements and guidance to help companies to identify those present obligations. However, those requirements have been problematic in practice, and therefore the IASB is seeking to improve them by using some of the concepts we added to the conceptual framework in 2018. This month, the IASB discussed possible amendments to IAS 37 that could affect the timing of recognition of some provisions. Two possible changes we discussed at the meeting that I want to highlight are the withdrawal of IFRIC 21 levies and a change in the requirements affecting the timing of recognition of obligations to pay levies. The implications of this change would be that some annual levies would be recognized progressively over the period in which they accumulate, rather than at a point in time at the end of or even after that period. A second possible change would be various clarifications of the guidance and new illustrative examples, including examples illustrating the application of the requirements to net zero commitments. The ISB did not make any decisions on these matters. As a next step, we will consult some of the ISB's advisory groups on the possible amendments discussed during the meeting.
Thanks, Linda. Let's move on to our standard setting projects, and I'll start with rate regulated activities. Linda, if I can turn back to you again to tell us a little bit more about the discussion and the decisions that we made.
Well, I'd be happy to do that. Of course, Neely. We started the discussion with the proposals on recognition and measurement of regulatory assets and regulatory liability arising from long-term performance incentives. The ISB decided to retain the proposals in the exposure draft to require companies to estimate the amount of a long-term performance incentive and to determine the portion of that estimated amount that relates to the reporting period using a reasonable and supportable basis. In addition, the ISB decided the final standard should explain that regulatory assets are derecognized as a company recovers them by adding amounts to future regulated rates. Regulatory liabilities are derecognized as a company fulfills them by deducting amounts from future regulatory rates. The ISB also decided that the final standard clarifies that regulatory assets or regulatory liabilities are derecognized when the asset or liability ceases to meet the recognition threshold. This happens when the existence certainty of a regulatory asset or a regulatory liability falls below the more likely than not threshold. Finally, the ISB decided not to include guidance on securitization of regulatory assets.
Thanks, Linda. So let's move on to the Dynamic Risk Management Project, or DRM for short. As a reminder, in this project, the ISB is developing an accounting model for dynamic risk management activities that will enable investors to better understand the effect of those activities on the financial statements and the effects of interest rate risk management on amount, timing, and uncertainty of future cash flows. I would like to take this opportunity to point out to our listeners that amongst the agenda papers that were posted for this month, there's a very helpful paper that summarizes the relevant tentative decisions that we've made so far. Andreas, could I turn it over to you to talk about the decisions this month?
Sure, Neely. This month, the ISB clarified how to apply the requirements in the DRM model to determine the risk mitigation intention, or RMI for short, and the benchmark derivatives. The model defines the RMI as the portion of the current net open risk position, or CNOP, that a company intends to mitigate by using derivatives. One of the components of RMI is the managed risk, or the risk that the company is managing. In addition, the company uses benchmark derivatives to measure and represent its RMI. Having said that, the ISB decided that for purposes of determining the RMI, the managed risk is the interest rate risk that a company manages consistently with its risk management strategy. In other words, it is the interest rate on which the company's risk limits are based on. And the benchmark derivative is calibrated to current market rates of the managed risk to achieve a fair value of zero at the beginning of the period. The ISB also reconfirmed its previous tentative decisions that the RMI is evidenced by the actual amount of interest rate risk by repricing period transferred using external derivatives, and the company determines the available risk to mitigate in each of the repricing periods separately. And the setting of repricing periods must be consistent with the company's risk management strategy. Finally, we considered further the criterion of including in the CNOP future transactions only when they are highly probable. In this regard, the ISB decided to include in the CNOP future transactions that are the reinvestment or refinancing of existing financial assets or financial liabilities at the prevailing market interest rate when they are expected to occur, and to include in the scene of all other future transactions when they're highly probable to occur. As a next step, the ISB will continue its discussions on the topics identified in the project plan at a future meeting.
Thank you, Andreas. Let's move on now to another standard setting project, subsidiaries without public accountability disclosures. The ISB proposed a new IFRS accounting standard that would permit eligible subsidiaries of companies that apply IFRS accounting standards to report with reduced disclosure requirements. The board is now redeliberating those proposals in light of the feedback received. Linda, could you tell us more about the discussions this month?
Certainly. This month, the ISB discussed feedback and decided on some of the proposed disclosure requirements in the draft standard. First, we decided to retain the proposal and not revise the draft standard to include disclosure objectives. Secondly, we also decided to retain the proposal and not revise the draft standard to include guidance on how to apply the proposed disclosure requirements that are already in IFRS accounting standards. Therefore, in applying the new standard, eligible subsidiaries would still refer to the applicable IFRS accounting standard for guidance on how to apply the disclosure requirements. Thirdly, we decided to retain the relief from providing comparative information proposed in the draft standard. And lastly, the ISB started discussing the feedback on the proposed disclosure requirements in the draft standard. We decided to revise some of them which affect accounting standards such as IFRS 1, IFRS 7, and IAS 36. Note that our discussion of the feedback on proposed disclosure requirements is not yet complete. We still have to discuss the comments on 8 other IFRS accounting standards in a future meeting, so please stay tuned.
Thanks, Linda. So let's move on to the last standard-setting project we discussed this month, which is the Financial Instruments with Characteristics of Equity Project, or FICE for short. As many of you know, this project addresses challenges that arise in practice when companies apply IAS 32, Financial Instruments Presentation, in classifying issued financial instruments. Andreas, could you tell us a little bit more about what we discussed this month?
Sure, Nelly, my pleasure. This month, the ISB discussed the scope of IFRS 7, our standard on financial instruments disclosures, additional proposed disclosures, and transition requirements. We decided to amend the scope of IFRS 7 to reflect the fact that the proposed disclosure requirements would apply to a company's issued equity instruments. We considered it necessary to expand the objective of IFRS 7 to enable users of financial statements to understand how a company is financed and what its current and potential ownership structures are. In addition, we decided to make some refinements to the proposed disclosure requirements on terms and conditions and to require disclosures, such as including explanations and examples of debt-like and equity-like features in the application guidance and illustrative example sections of the forthcoming exposure draft, and also requiring companies to disclose significant judgments made in classifying the financial instrument or its component parts as a financial liability or as equity. We also decided to add further disclosure requirements to complement the proposed clarifications to the classification and presentation requirements in IAS 32. If you're interested in the details of these additional requirements, please refer to the April ISB update on our website. And finally, regarding transition, the ISB decided to require a company to apply the proposed amendments retrospectively with a restatement of comparative information. I should point out this concludes all technical decision making of this project. The staff will ask the board for permission to begin the balloting process next month, and we expect to publish an exposure draft in the fourth quarter of this year.
Thank you, Andreas. Let's move on now to the research projects that we discussed this month. I will start with Business Combinations Under Common Control, or BCUCC as we like to call it. This month, the ISB did not make any decisions, but discussed the project direction. Andreas, could you share some thoughts about why the board is considering project direction now and what we discussed during the meeting?
Absolutely. And it's by pure coincidence that I get all the projects with the funny acronyms. The board considered the direction of this project at the April meeting in response to questions raised at a previous meeting. Board members noted that this project has been going on for a long time. There were questions about the importance of this project to investors, and investors had mixed views on how to account for these transactions. This month, we considered the possible project direction and discussed three possible options. Option one is to develop recognition, measurement, and disclosure requirements. For example, which measurement method to apply to BCUCCs. Considering jurisdictional diversity and user feedback, we could prescribe one approach or allow companies a choice of method, but this would not reduce the diversity in practice. The second option would be to develop disclosure-only requirements, and the final option would be to discontinue the project. The next steps Webby for the staff to get feedback from some of our consultative groups and other stakeholders and present recommendations on the project direction at a future meeting.
Thank you, Andreas. So we closed our April meeting by discussing the research project Equity Method. Linda, do you want to fill us in on what the IASB discussed?
I'm happy to do that, Neely. This month, the IASB discussed one application question within the scope of the project and decided that an investor would account for and include in the carrying amount of its investment in an associate a deferred tax asset or liability arising from recognizing its share of the associate's identifiable assets and liabilities at fair value. In addition, the IASB decided to move this project to the standard-setting work plan. A move to standard setting signifies that the IASB believes it has identified feasible solutions to some of the application questions in the scope of this project. As a result, we will work towards publishing an exposure draft, which will include the proposals of targeted amendments to IAS 28 in associates and joint ventures. But please do stay tuned, as the board is yet to discuss some of the application questions around the accounting for joint ventures, and we do intend to do that. Back to you, Neely.
Thanks, Linda. So that concludes our April discussions. But before we wrap up, we just wanted to share a few other highlights. Coming soon in May, we expect to publish three documents. The first is our request for information on the post-implementation review of the impairment requirements in IFRS 9. And this will have a 120-day comment period. The second is our final amendments to improve disclosures of supplier finance arrangements. And these requirements will be effective on 1 January 2024. And then the third, as we already mentioned, are the final amendments to IAS 12 related to OECD pillar tax reform.
We should also highlight, Neely, that companies are starting to publish interim reports under our standard IFRS 17 insurance contracts. The standard was issued back in 2017, so this is a significant milestone in bringing transparency and comparability to the accounting for insurance companies for investors. So this is something that we'll be looking for.
And both, can I just throw in an internal information? Because I would like to mention that this month we welcomed our newest IASB board member, Florian Esterer. We are thrilled to have him on board. And with this appointment, we are now at full complement of board members, which is fantastic to have once again.
Thank you. Some very exciting developments. So finally, I'd like to invite our listeners to register for the IFRS Foundation Conference, which takes place on the 26th and 27th of June in London. We will cover the global change in standard setting since the 2022 conference and share in-depth knowledge on financial reporting and sustainability from the IFRS Foundation and external speakers and presenters. That is all for this month's podcast. You can catch up on previous episodes of this and the Interpretations Committee podcast on our website, as well as our YouTube channel and Spotify. For the latest developments, make sure to subscribe to our website. And if you like this podcast, please do take some time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Thank you very much for joining us, and please stay tuned again next month for an update on the May IASB meeting. Thank you.